Welcome to Look Ahead Radio and Viewpoints Around the World. My name is Tom Arms, and in a moment I'll be joined by my old friend Lockwood Phillips. This week we're talking about, well, Syria. I don't know if you enjoy it, but I hope you find it informative. Thank you for listening.
Welcome to Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms. This evening, joining us from London, England. This portion of the program has been pre-recorded to accommodate his sleeping arrangement, since it's nearly 5 hours ahead of our time here in the U.S., and he is probably snoring away and encountering sheep, or maybe missiles, and I'll explain to you about that in just a moment, with a little bit of tongue-in-cheek and a little satirical remarks there. Tom, good afternoon to you, and actually, well, good evening as this is being aired. Good evening.
Good afternoon, evening to you too, Lockwood.
And so I'll start off with our normal question. What's the weather like in your burg?
Still miserable. Oh. Absolutely miserable. We keep waiting for spring. I went out this weekend, bought lots of plants to put in the garden, and it's just been raining too much. Haven't been able to get out.
But what's the temperature?
The temperature is probably about high 50s.
Okay.
Low 60s at the most.
It's pretty cool, and it's pretty cool here as well. So that is something we're paying attention to as well. Yeah, it's been a late spring and a slow one for us here in the States. All right, I mentioned the issue of counting missiles, and this will probably consume a fair amount of our time today. We're watching with interest what's happening in Syria, in the Middle East in general. And, of course, the president announced early that he wanted this, that is, President Trump, wanted to react to the possible chemical attack in Syria. I say possible. Every indication is a chemical attack. And the question here in the States, Tom, was, well, will the president have any allies? And lo and behold, yesterday afternoon, I was reading news reports from the European press that both Great Britain and France were preparing for missile strikes in Syria, and in fact had advised airlines to be very observant and probably in some instances probably avoiding certain airspace. So, Tom, the door is opening. What or open to you? What is going on there in the United Kingdom and in Europe and vis-a-vis Syria, Russia, and Iran?
Well, for a start, France is definitely going to be backing Trump. There's no doubt about it. Syria was a French colony. It was given to Syria after World War I in the Sykes-Picot Agreement. They have a historic role. They believe they have a historic role and responsibility in Syria. Macron has made it absolutely clear that if there are any more chemical weapons attacks to accept a French response. The UK, very, very likely. Now, France, Macron can make the decision. He can make the decision himself, the way the French government is set up. In the case of the UK, it may have to go to a vote in Parliament. And so Mrs. May is being a little bit more cautious than Macron. She is saying, yes, we will back you, but she's just edging her bet slightly because she remembers that David Cameron had this same problem in 2013 when he said that they would back the US. And then it went to a vote in Parliament and he lost it. Hmm. And so the UK did not immediately participate in the strikes, the airstrikes against ISIS in Syria and Iraq.
Now, quick question for you, Tom, and of course, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com, Look Ahead Radio with us, he in the United Kingdom as we speak, as a matter of fact. Tom, this is a question that was raised by one of our callers last evening, and if you will, a little bit of skepticism and cynicism about the fact that this is a Syrian-initiated chemical attack. And now we're talking about a chemical release of probably chlorine. There's a question also of possibly a nerve gas, maybe sarin. But the question was posed that this is really contrary to, well, good strategic thinking on the part of Assad and the Russians and Iranians, if they are all involved in this, on the simple basis that things are beginning to stabilize. I say stabilize, but Bashar Assad is gaining control of the country. Why would he initiate a chemical attack that would result in the reaction that we're seeing right now? And I want to talk about this in the world reaction as well. But is there some question as to maybe this was perpetrated by somebody other than the Syrians?
Who?
Who? Maybe.
Who? There's
maybe.
No one else.
What about?
They don't bomb their own people.
Well,
I mean, the rebels wouldn't bomb their own children and wives. Americans? Do you think President Trump would do it?
No.
I don't. But, I'm not a particular fan of President Trump, but I don't think he would. I don't think the French would. The fact is that they have done this repeatedly. This is not the first time. In the last few weeks, there's lots of reports that there have been other attacks which people have turned a blind eye to.
Really?
This is just one that they were able to pick up on.
Oh, all right. No, I'm just offering you a criticism. Don't
overreact. Yeah, the great conspiracy theory.
No, it's not a great conspiracy theory. The
Alex
theory.
Alex Jones and Sandy Hook.
No, the question here, Tom, is what is the confirmation that it was Syria and or a Russian, Iranian, Syrian combination? What is the?
Well, they just had the OPCW, the Organization for Prevention of Cruelty,
right.
or Organization Chemical. For Prevention of Chemical Weapons,
mm-hmm.
Just got in there and reported that, in fact, there were chemical weapons used.
Okay.
All the symptoms are conducive to chemical weapons.
Mm-hmm.
They cannot prove from whence they came.
Exactly. All right.
But just that they were used. The Russians and the Syrians have denied that anything like chemical weapons were used.
Ah, okay. So they basically they've been caught obviously lying. Here's a question for you, Tom. Syria, Russia, Iran, and I'm curious, does Turkey have anything in this combination?
No. Not in this particular combination. No.
Okay. And then
the Turks are concentrating on the northern part of Syria where the Kurds are.
Okay. You said at the outset, both off air, and I think you mentioned it on air as well, the issue of war. How serious does the European community see this potential for warfare, out-and-out warfare in Syria, and who would be the, what would be the lineup of the war?
It depends on who fires on whom. Here's the situation. The French have said they want to attack the chemical weapons stockpiles.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not, they haven't actually said that. They said they want to attack the chemical weapons. Now, obviously, intelligence probably knows where these chemical weapons are. If they do attack the chemical weapons, of course, you run the risk of a huge toxic cloud,
right.
Spreading around the Middle East. I don't think that's a possibility. Will the next move be another one-off strike like the one in April?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are saying that would be a mistake because what is needed is a coordinated strategy.
Mm-hmm.
The Russians are saying that if you attack anything, they will shoot down the missiles. And today, the Russian ambassador in the Lebanon said, not only will we shoot down the missiles, but we will attack the base from whence the missiles came. Now, if that's the case, and they come from, say, a American destroyer or a French destroyer, or say, for instance, the British Air Force base in Cyprus, then that is an attack against sovereign American, French, or British territory. Now, that is an act of war.
Now, a question for you. We're going to go to a break, and we'll come back to this conversation just a moment with you, Tom. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And, of course, we're talking with him every Wednesday afternoon, Viewpoints Around the World. Tom, how is the European media covering this? Is there a sense of foreboding? Is this just news right now? Or are you expressing, of course, your personal concern, which I appreciate, I do. But what is the feeling generally there in the European community?
Oh, yes, there's a strong sense of foreboding. And a lot of people are extremely worried. Yes, there's a strong sense of foreboding. If there isn't one in the United States, I think they should start waking up.
Okay, we'll leave it right there for that for a moment. You're listening to Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And just to remind you, and you may be wishing to make a phone call or comment, feel free to do so by email at viewpointsradio@hotmail.com. Please feel free to do so, viewpointsradio@hotmail.com. This is a significant story. One, I'm very appreciative of the fact that we have Tom joining us this afternoon, actually this evening, and this portion has been pre-recorded. You're listening to Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. He is there in London, England, where we speak every Wednesday afternoon. It is nighttime for him, as a matter of fact, moving on to the midnight hour. So this portion has been pre-recorded to accommodate his sleeping schedule, which I do appreciate. Tom, we were talking a moment ago about the situation in Syria, the potential for armed conflict, warfare. And I'm wondering, amidst all of this, how does Bashar Assad maintain his control of Syria in light of the fact that Russia and Iran are stepping up? And is this a unique alliance, or is this just a matter of a temporary alliance of convenience among two, very aggressive nations, and then we've got Turkey in the mix? So what can come out of this? Are we looking at a significant alliance, or just an alliance of convenience for Iran and Russia?
Especially for Russia, it's an alliance which goes back decades.
Okay.
It goes back to the days of the Soviet Union, and the Russians have inherited that alliance. And it is an alliance between the Assad family and Moscow. Syria is Russia's foothold in the Middle East, just like Israel is America's foothold in the Middle East. Syria is to Russia what Israel is to America.
That's, by the way, so I want to compliment
it's very
you.
Difficult. It's very difficult for them to back down. They've got bases in Syria. They've had bases in Syria since the 70s.
I want to interrupt you and say I compliment you on that. That is something that I was not aware of. Many of our listeners may be, but this is something I was not privy to. Okay, then the role of Iran, and how does Iran maintain its influence and control of the environment if Russia, and we've still got that Trump player in Turkey standing by, how does Iran maintain its control of the area? Because I'm confident that Iran wants to be, if you will, the big power base in the Middle East.
Okay. Well, you've got a sort of a triumvirate here. Turkey's on the fringe.
Okay.
And what you've got, Russia providing the political power, almost superpower status, backed up by nuclear weapons if, the absolute worst comes to worse, and a seat on the Security Council. You notice Russia, every time Syria comes up, Russia uses its veto.
Mm-hmm.
Syria, well, Assad is the man who's there. He's actually physically there. And so someone has to be backed. Iran provides boots on the ground. And Hezbollah, they've got thousands of troops, and they can move those troops easily into Syria and through northern Iraq. And so Russia does not have that many troops. It has planes, Okay. It has mercenaries from Russia.
Right.
A lot of the people who are Russians who are working in Syria are technically not Russian soldiers.
Right.
They are, in fact, mercenaries paid for by the Russian government, but technically they're paying Russian security companies.
Very similar to Ukraine.
They can have a sort of deniability that right. they're involved.
Right. Very similar to the Ukraine. Okay. I want to move on to other issues, but what impact does this have on Iraq? What impact does this have on Saudi Arabia and the Middle East, the broader Middle East? Outside of the potential warfare specifically associated with Syria, how does this impact and how does the European community see this impacting the situation in the Middle East? For example, with Yemen and Saudi Arabia, and by the way, there was a missile attack yesterday or early this morning in Saudi Arabia. What's the overall impact then?
Okay, for a start, Syria is very geostrategic.
Okay.
It's right in the middle of the Middle East. You know, has a border with Israel, has a border with Lebanon, has a border with Iraq and so forth. It is very geostrategic, right in the middle. And so there's always a danger that any conflict in something like that, where it's right in the middle, will spill over into the wider Middle East. And in fact, it has. I mean, you've got displaced people living in Jordan and Lebanon and Turkey, and you've got the refugee problem as a result of the Syrian civil war.
Okay.
So all those things have already happened or are happening now.
All right. I'm going to interrupt, though, very quickly. We understand that. I want to go back to Saudi Arabia. I've got to bring in Israel. How does this impact either their association? Saudi Arabia has shown some interest in supporting Israel versus vice. What's the strategic lineup there?
I think they're supporting each other privately. I don't think Saudi Arabia could ever support Israel publicly. And part of the problem, one of the reasons why people have to get involved in Syria, is in order to keep Israel out. Because Israel is obviously in danger here, but there's a very real danger that the war could spread to Israel and end up with an attack on Israel. And the Israeli politicians are regularly telling people, if you don't do something in Syria, if you don't do something in Iran, if you don't do something in Iraq, we will.
Mm-hmm. All right. And then
we don't want that.
All right. What is the reaction in the European community? And you mentioned the issue of the asylum seekers. Germany, what other countries? I'm picking, we've mentioned France, the UK, Austria, you name it. What is the overall opinion in the European community? Are they gearing up or girding themselves for military action?
France and Britain are. So why isn't Germany? Germany is not really a military power.
Okay,
let's get this absolutely straight. Germany is not. The two big military powers in Europe are France and Britain.
Okay.
If Germany contributes,
all right,
it would be a token force.
Okay. All right. My question is, will any diplomatic pressure be applied from all of the European community on this, or are we beyond the point of diplomacy?
Of course it will. But the problem is that, you know, it might move past diplomacy very quickly now. I mean,
okay,
you know,
that's fine.
You know, there's threats to respond very quickly indeed.
And I
think it probably has. But even after that military attack, then there still has to be diplomatic support from the European community. And I think it will be coming because it will come via France and Britain.
Okay. And then the other question, and I'm going to move on to a few other items. I think it's an important story, of course. The role of China. Any interest, and anyone made contact with China to see if they would be possibly have some influence on Russia, at least?
Well, the Chinese have, you know, I don't think they probably have been approached, but the Chinese have been silent about it.
Okay.
They don't see themselves as being directly involved, and they probably want to stay aloof from it.
Well,
you know, they've got enough issues with the South China Sea and Korea and places like that. They don't want to get involved in the Middle East. It's a quagmire.
Understatement. All right, I want to move on to a few other items. I've got to take a quick break with our foreign editor, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. You're listening to Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
Observations of an Expat by Tom Arms from LookAheadNews.com. The world appears to be heading for a perfect storm. It just needs a catalyst to blow it on shore, hopefully a change in the political winds to divert it. The storm is being driven by the forces of nationalism, historic conflicts, a sense of justice and injustice, and the absence of a coherent diplomatic strategy. It is fed by ill-judged rhetorical bluster which creates political hostages to fortune. The United States, almost certainly in conjunction with the two biggest European military powers, Britain and France, is on the brink of responding to the repeated use of chemical weapons by the Russian-backed Assad regime. Russia has vetoed all attempts to resolve this repeated atrocity through the United Nations. Moscow has warned that if Western forces attempt to bomb Syrian air bases, ground forces, or chemical weapons depots, then it will shoot down any missiles involved in the attack. Russia's ambassador to Lebanon ominously added, "If there's a strike by the Americans, then the missiles will be downed, and even the sources from which the missiles were fired." If there is a Russian attack on an American destroyer or submarine or the British sovereign air base in Cyprus, well, then the storm will have hit. This approaching disaster did not materialize overnight in a vacuum. It has been brewing for years. Obama's foreign policy was weak, especially in Syria, where his infamous red line exposed an unwillingness or inability to act decisively. Trump has been no better. He dropped a hail of bombs on a Syrian airbase after a chemical weapons attack last year, but it was a one-off. He, too, has failed to develop a coherent response to the Syrian civil war. This is unsurprising because he has intentionally decimated his own diplomatic corps. Trump has been over-focused on North Korea, the economic threat of China, immigration, the Mueller investigation, dismantling legislation from the Obama era, and initiating a spate of trade wars driven by 19th century nationalistic ideals of the type that led to the world wars in the 20th century. Putin is every bit as bad when it comes to nationalism. His stated aim is to restore Russia to the glory days of the Soviet Empire. His problem is finding the means to achieve this end. He's spending heavily on military hardware, about 8% of GDP. But the GDP is down because of Western sanctions and a corrupt and criminally mismanaged economy. But at the same time, Putin views the West as weak, ineffectual, and politically divided. Trump is a joke. His commitment to NATO is in doubt. The EU and Western alliance has been damaged by Brexit. Racist-inspired populism is dividing almost all the Western countries. Putin, however, does not want a war. He would lose. And if he didn't, the cost would be a Pyrrhic battle for all concerned. So he conducts a running hybrid guerrilla war on several fronts to unbalance the West and continually test and weaken its resolve in much the same way that Hitler did in the 1930s. He sends green men into Ukraine, shoots down airlines, murders dissidents seeking refuge in Britain, conducts cyber attacks against the Baltic states, bombs aid convoys, and interferes with the U.S. presidential elections. Each time he is accused, and each time, in the face of overwhelming evidence, he denies the accusations and puts forward a set of alternative facts. The latest involving Syria is that the White Helmets were responsible for the chemical attack, which, according to the Russians, never happened anyway. The White Helmets, by the way, are a band of Syrian volunteers dedicated to rescuing the victims of the Syrian civil war. They were nominated for the 2017 Nobel Peace Prize. Putin has firmly planted his flag in Syria. The Assad regime has become to Russia what Israel is to America, a priceless geostrategic asset in a vital region from which they cannot retreat. While probing away, the Russian president may have created the ultimate test for Western resolve and backed himself into a corner from which a storm could be his only escape.
We now return to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And I just want to mention that we've been following with interest the events in Syria and in the Middle East. And I want to move on to a few other items and get some interest of issues of coverage, news coverage. And Tom, of course, joining us from London, England, where it is going on towards midnight his time. So this portion of the program has been pre-recorded. Tom, I want to move on to another topic of significant discussion here, particularly in the States, and I'm wondering what the issue is there in the United Kingdom and the European press. It's a topic of social media and the hearings associated with Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg. We have been watching via television and particularly the internet, the hearings yesterday and ongoing still today. How is that being reported in the European community?
It's being reported live.
Really?
We're watching the hearings as well. You know, as we've discussed on several occasions, Lockwood, is, and as Zuckerberg and the senators make it absolutely clear, Facebook is not an American problem. It's an international problem.
Yes.
I mean, just look at the catalyst for this latest debacle. And it is the fact that a company in Britain, Cambridge Analytica, took Facebook data, which was mined for them by a Cambridge or a British scientist, and used it in elections, not only in the U.S., but possibly also for the Brexit vote and in Kenya. So this is not just an American issue. And Facebook has over 2 billion, mm-hmm. 2 billion regular users. And there are not 2 billion people who live in America.
Right. No, the other aspect of this, Tom, and I'm curious about your observations. Obviously, he is addressing an issue with the U.S. Congress and lawmakers. Associated, though, with it is you've got European community that have laws as well. Might it be a situation where someone from Facebook or maybe Mark Zuckerberg himself will have to appear before some legislative or government community there in the European community, maybe their parliament in Great Britain, or maybe a court associated with the European community? What's the potential there? He's been asked.
I don't know if it's been subpoenaed, but he has been asked to appear before a House of Commons, a British House of Commons committee, and refused.
Mm. And how is that going over?
That's Zuckerberg. He said he would send one of his underlings, but the British Parliament is not happy about it at all. Now, I don't know about other countries. But I should think that there's a great, good possibility that the European Parliament might want to see him as well.
I was wondering about that. So it is getting coverage. You say live coverage, and is this reaching the headlines of the European Community Press, European Press?
Oh yes, it's getting as much coverage here, because there are as many Facebook users here as there are in the United States.
Okay, that's a very important observation on your part, Tom. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon here on Viewpoints Around the World. Tom, another topic of headline news, and I'm just wondering how it's being covered there in the European community. And, of course, that is the ongoing dispute between the special prosecutor and President Trump, and, of course, the recent disclosure or announcement that the FBI raided President Trump's lawyer. How is that being covered? Is it top of the fold news? Is it a topic of daily conversation?
Yes, we've hit on the three stories that are sort of top of the fold news and daily conversation here. And a lot of people here, the Anthony Zucker, the BBC's correspondent in North America, thinks that this raid might be the straw that breaks the camel's back.
Mm-hmm.
that it could, you know, this could be at crunch time for President Trump. Either he dismisses Mueller, in which case that creates a constitutional crisis, or alternatively, there's something that's been passed on to the federal prosecutor in New York, right, which could be particularly damaging to him.
Okay, and I want to move on to a few other items that is being covered. Let's talk about, let's stick with a U.S. Activity, but one that also involves the European Union, and that, of course, the trade wars, the dispute and concerns between China and the U.S., and, of course, the topic of NAFTA. I'm curious, what has been the reaction of the announcement that President Xi Jinping has announced that he is sort of calming down the waters, if you will, over the potential of a trade war with the United States? And of course, we've had the recent announcement that NAFTA is in fact being reformulated, for want of a better description, between the U.S. and the NAFTA trading partners Canada and Mexico. How is that being covered there in the European community?
I think that's probably well below the fold because so many things are grabbing the headlines at the moment. There was a story which came over Reuters, which I found very interesting, and this may have contributed to the fact that the trade war talk has calmed down a bit, that ways are being found to get around the tariffs. One thing is soybeans.
Right.
Now, you know, China, as you know, put a high tariff on soybeans, or threatened to put a high tariff on soybeans. This would really hit at Trump, I think, because soya is a big crop. The two big producers of soya are Brazil and the United States. And your biggest user by far is China, or your biggest importer of soybeans is China. Well, it turns out that it's still going to get to China. So the soya farmers don't have to worry too much because soya processing factories in the Netherlands and Germany have bought huge quantities of the soya crop. Okay, so they're going to go to Germany and the Netherlands, and then they're going to be processed slightly. I don't know how. I've never processed a soybean myself. And then they will be shipped on to China. Now, it means that people, you know, the shippers in the U.S. are going to lose out. It means that the warehouse owners in the U.S. are going to lose out, and the processors. And it might be a little bit more expensive in China, but not nearly as expensive as paying the tariffs.
So the but basically,
and I think you find that with a lot of products,
right?
Because there's such an integrated system these days
of transportation. Yeah, no,
of transportation and everything else.
Yeah. All right. I want to move on to two other items since we're talking about the U.S. One more item of concern and interest: the North Korean talks and the possibility of denuclearization of North Korea. I don't want to get into what exactly that represents because I think that's just a nice sounding term. Real quickly, any major coverage of this? We're still looking at maybe a June meeting between the presidents of North Korea and the U.S. And of course, we have now a high level meeting taking place between North Korea and South Korea. Again, any recognition, and I've got to ask, any credit given to the Trump administration on this?
No credit at all.
Mm.
And I heard it was going to be May. You heard it's been pushed back to June.
Maybe it's maybe May or June. I misspoke there. There's still that the determination of the date is still fairly fluid. All right.
And yeah. I think that's important because I think that it. They probably jumped a bit too soon because all these things require a lot of preparation.
Right.
The pre-talks. I think really the issue is going to come down to you wanted to avoid it, and so we will, but I'll just say that the issue is going to come down to, and this is what is being said here in the European press, as to the definition of denuclearization.
Right. And quite frankly, that's going to be, is going to be nuanced. And so rather than even discuss that, I think the fact that there is conversation happening is in and of itself pretty significant. I want to move on to an item associated, and we touched on this last week, the crime spree in the United Kingdom. What's happening there? What process? What success? And this has been rather pretty critical of the mayor of London. What's the situation there in London with the use of knives? It's pretty damning if you really get right down to it.
Yeah, we don't have guns, but we do have knives.
Right.
And we have a street gang problem here in the UK.
Is there any association of that street gang with the recent arrival of asylum seekers in not only in the in the European community? Okay.
No.
All right.
No. No. It does tend to focus on the Afro-Caribbean community, which are not the asylum seekers.
Okay. All right. That's important, and I appreciate you clarifying that. All right. And I did see, but I don't know how accurate this is, that the mayor and others are proposing some sort of restriction on the use of or the possession of knives. Is that for real?
Yes, absolutely.
What? How?
And they're talking about bringing back what's called stop and search, which was actually ended by Theresa May when she was the Home Secretary. And stop and search gives the police the powers to stop anyone that they want and to search them for weapons.
Now, you know, that was done in New York City and was very done and successfully so under Rudy Giuliani. But then you got into the issue of, political correctness.
Racism.
Yeah, go ahead.
Stereotyping, basically.
Yeah.
You know, the people most likely to join street gangs are young Afro-Caribbeans. And so they stop all the young Afro-Caribbeans who feel they're being prejudiced against.
Right.
So if you're a young Afro-Caribbean doing this PhD, you get a bit annoyed.
Yeah, absolutely. But then again, the reality is the crime spree, which you mentioned last week. And by the way, is there any cessation of this crime spree? Is it calming down, or is it status quo, or heating up?
No. It's, if anything, it's getting worse. They had one case recently of a burglary that went wrong for the burglar. He was stabbed by a 78-year-old who was the burglar's victim.
Right.
And died. As a result, this is particularly sad, the family and friends of the burglar started putting up flowers outside the house of where the burglary took place. And neighbors have been out there tearing down the flowers and stomping on them and burning them. And so they've had demonstrations going back and forth, one supporting the burglar who died, one supporting those who think he should have died, and the police are out there with mounted horses, and it's a bit of a mess.
That's an understatement. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon. Viewpoints around the world.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And just to remind you, this portion of the program has been pre-recorded to accommodate his sleeping schedule. Wrapping it up, and we tried to end it on a rather happy note. We started off on a pretty severe note, as a few moments ago we were talking about the events in Syria and, of course, events around the world that, sadly, are not always something to smile about, but we will end it with something of interest here in just a moment. But before I do that, I have one other quick question I want to ask you, Tom. It has to do with France, the topic of Emmanuel Macron, and he has, of course, been sort of a highlight for the the globalist, well, I shouldn't say the populist, well, globalist and populist. That's, I'm sorry, I'm confusing the issue because it is confusing, but he is now having a battle with the trade unions. And there was, you know, a great deal of hope that Emmanuel Macron would be the new leader of the European Union and the European community. What is his political future and what's happening with the trade unions?
At the moment, he still has public support. Now, he sat out in his campaign and afterwards, he made it absolutely clear he wants to reform the statist, and that means state-controlled sort of economy, that really is part of the French character. He wants to bring it into the 21st century. And so he wanted to end jobs for life and automatic pay increases and things like that. Not surprisingly, this has come against some opposition from the unions, because you can imagine that sort of system works in their favor. And so they are starting to go on strike, starting with the railways, and now the teachers, and now the students, and now the public, the civil servants, and finally, of course, the railway workers.
Now, that being said, what impact does this have on his relations with the rest of Europe? And of course, we haven't talked about the European Union. We've touched on it from time to time. And we've got also the, you know, the efforts of leadership. What does this do to his role as a leader there in the European community?
Okay, the failure of successive French presidents to solve this problem has stymied French political leadership in Europe. If he fails, then it will stymie his efforts to lead the EU. If he succeeds, he will then have a good, solid domestic base upon which to move forward into greater activities in the EU as a whole.
Well, we'll be following this, of course, hopefully without any major conflagration in the Middle East. So hopefully we can get back to the issues of the future of the European Union, a topic you and I have discussed and debated on numerous occasions. Tom, as we wrap it up, let's move to something that's a little offbeat, as always with you. The Singing Road in the Netherlands?
Yes. Outside this town in the Netherlands called Gelsum, they've put in strips in the road. And as the cars go over the strips, they play a tune.
Really?
Yes. King of the Road. Over and over and over and over again.
What is the...
If you go exactly the right speed, it plays it exactly right. If you go too fast, it plays it very fast.
Well, now, here's my question. What was the purpose of this?
Well, it was just meant to, you know, it's on a road which is part of a very long journey. It was meant to lighten the mood. The villagers are saying they're going nuts. It's the same tune over and over, 24 hours a day.
Okay, so the villagers, are we talking about the fact that villagers can hear it in their cars, or are they hearing
it? No, they can hear it in their homes, in their gardens.
Really?
So they're going to take the strips out. It was a good effort, I think.
Is there anywhere we could see this on YouTube or some fashion for those of us that can't get to the Netherlands? This is fabulous.
Yeah, I suppose if you do a search under Gelsum, J-E-L-S-U-M, or the Singing Road, or something like that.
Okay. We will see what we can discover on this and see if we can't post it in some fashion. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Tom, you've brightened my day at least. Thank you very much for being with us. And, well, hope the weather does improve there in the United Kingdom. We're hoping for it here as well.
Okay, I hope it does too.
Viewpoints.
Thank you very much, Lockwood.
Our pleasure. Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio.
Ahead Radio is a production of The Talk Station.